the Red Hot Chili Pipers, Socks in the Frying Pan, and the Drowsy Lads. These are just some of the recently announced bands expected to play at Milwaukee's Irish Fest this year. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. And 41 years ago, Celtic Milwaukee created the iconic festival that celebrates Irish culture and music. It happens almost every August on this St. Patrick's Day. We're learning about the event's creation as we explore Irish history and culture in Milwaukee and Wisconsin. Our guest is Brian Witt, the cultural exhibit coordinator for Milwaukee Irish Fest. We want you to join the conversation. Are you celebrating your Irish roots today? How do you do that? Do you attend the Milwaukee Irish Fest Festival each year? What's your favorite part? Give us a call, 800-642-1234 or send us an email at wpr.ideas@wpr.org. That would help. Hi, Brian.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I want to say falcha, Brian.
Falcha. Yeah. Yeah, which means thank you very much, thousand times.
Wonderful. Well, falcha who don't know, it means welcome. So yeah, that's the extent of my Gaelic. But thank you, Brian, for being with us. Tell us about your Irish background.
Well, my mother's family immigrated to Canada during the famine. So they got there in the 1840s and ended up settling in the Ottawa Valley in the Quebec side of the Ottawa River. The Ottawa River was essentially an Irish highway, and still is to this day. In fact, the area she grew up, the Pontiac County, was the most Irish county in all of Canada up until recently. It was about 98% Irish at one point. So it was the western part of the very western county in Quebec. So then my mother ended up coming down to see her uncle, who had come down from Cuyo, where my mother's family had lived, and bought a farm in northern Wisconsin following the lumberjack camps, as so many Irish did. So then she came down to visit him, and she met my father, whose family came from Germany to the lumberjack trail.
Yes. Sounds like my French Canadian ancestors. So, yeah, very similar. You were the Irishman of the Year by the Shamrock Club of Wisconsin a few years back. Why don't you tell us about the Shamrock Club of Wisconsin? What's that all about?
Okay, the Shamrock Club is the oldest Irish membership organization in the state of Wisconsin. It formed in 1960. We just celebrated our 62nd year. We have chapters in Milwaukee, Green Bay, New Dublin, which is New London, La Crosse, South Central, and Lafayette County, amongst others. We started as an organization to where the Irish born and the Irish Americans wanted to get together to create an interconnectedness. I mean, the International Institute of Wisconsin from Milwaukee helped the Shamrock Club become an organization because the Irish were dancing at the folk fair every year. They said, well, why don't you start your own organization? That way we don't have to worry about no representation or who's going to represent. I said, oh, great. So we did. So a number of the things that we did was we started travel to Ireland in the early 60s. So at that time we were chartering flights, and nobody was flying to Ireland at the time. We were like the second organization in the country, and it was very profitable for us, take these charter flights over until the airlines realized that they're losing revenue from all these Irish groups going over to Ireland. And then another thing we did was we started the first St. Patrick's Day parade since 1843 in Milwaukee in 1967. Would have been our 56th, but we celebrated our 54th because, you know, we took a hiatus there for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Then in 1966, we also started Irish Dance, the Shamrock Club Dancers, which today are the Trinity and the Cashel Academy of Irish Dance. And all the schools that came after them. Then in 1979, Ed Ward, who was the president of the Shamrock Club at the time, said, hey, you know, we should start an Irish festival. Since the Italians had one, I think we could do pretty good. So he brought that to the Shamrock Club board, and then we went from there. And a couple of other things that the Shamrock Club started in Milwaukee were the Irish Cultural and Heritage Center on 22nd, Wisconsin, the Celtic Women International, which is based at the ICAC. So it's we've had a long, long, colorful history, and I'm happy to be president of it at this very point. And speaking of parades, a lot of the chapters had their parades last week, and New Dublin, on the other hand, is going to have theirs coursing through the streets of New London this coming weekend, this coming Saturday. So if you haven't had a chance to see another St. Patrick's Day parade, you have your chance this weekend.
I was wondering about that because I had looked on your website and saw that that parade was last Saturday. And here we are, St. Patrick's Day today. So I'm glad to see that you're spreading out that those celebrations. So that's great.
Yeah, and we actually had, you know, considering, well, I had to walk the route because I didn't get enough cars. So walking a mile and a half and... pardon me, 12-degree weather, the 20-mile-an-hour winds.
Yeah, so it was cold.
Chill factors. Mm-hmm. It was cold. Yeah, so you know where all your extremities were at that point.
Yeah, for sure. I know there was a lot of runs and jogs and what have you this last weekend, too. And this Saturday looks a little bit better, so hopefully we'll have a little bit nicer weather. But let's get into... Milwaukee's Irish history. When did the Irish immigrants really start coming to the Milwaukee area? And I know you had mentioned northern Wisconsin with the loggers, but what brought people down to this part of the state?
The Irish came to Milwaukee initially in the 1830s. So the Irish were here pre-famine. A lot of them, I'm not sure if you know about the fact that Milwaukee was the first land scam in the United States, where all these Yankee investors bought land in Milwaukee in the Third Ward.
I did not know that.
And if they came in the wintertime, they were able to see that, look, the land is here. And they came in the summertime, they discovered that their land was 5 feet below the water. So and people lost, well, even back then, they lost millions of dollars. So people sold at distressed rates. And when the Irish started coming here, there were a number of Irish immigration groups that were bringing people over in chain migrations. But you see an awful lot of Munster names, Southern Irish names, in the names that are the Irish names in Milwaukee. A lot of these Munster people came from Cork and Limerick and Tipperary and Kerry. And they came in, and what they did was they took down a lot of the... Milwaukee used to have a little more diverse landscape. They took down a lot of the higher hills, like the one over by... that was adjacent to City Hall. It was about a 60-foot hill. They took that, and they filled in the Third Ward. I mean, at one point, they said you'd be able to take a boat from the harbor of Milwaukee over to 5th and Wells, where the Wisconsin Center is now. It was that full of water.
Mm-hmm.
So the Irish came in, and they started converting the Third Ward into a livable place by filling in the ward. And they built a number of houses there, and they weren't the greatest houses in the world. And... They made a home of it. So the Irish had a church called St. John's Cathedral. In 1843, when the Catholic Church was trying to decide where to place the archdiocesan see, they had Green Bay and Prairie du Chien as the two choices, which were dominated by the French. And there was a Swiss priest by the name of Father Martin Kundig, who founded a lot of Irish parishes and actually knew how to speak Gaelic, who convinced Solomon Juneau, the mayor of Milwaukee at that time, who also owned the Milwaukee Sentinel, to hold the St. Patrick's Day parade to get the archdiocesan see in Milwaukee. So Father Kundig managed to get people, Irish from, up in just about every surrounding county going outwards about the 75 miles, bring them down for the parade. So then there's this great display of Irish Catholic pride.
Ah.
And then they sent that over to, they sent the newspaper clippings over to bishops in Baltimore. And the Catholic Church at that time was dominated by Irish.
And let's just wait until we come back after the news to finish that off. We're talking with Brian Witt, the Culture Exhibits Coordinator for Milwaukee's Irish Fest and President of the Milwaukee Chapter of the Shamrock Club of Wisconsin. What questions do you have about Irish history? Do you have Irish history in your background? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. We'll be back right after this look at the news, so stay with us. You are listening to The Larry Mueller Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Jill Nadeau. Today we're talking about Irish history and culture in our state, and specifically in Milwaukee area. Our guest is Brian Witt. He is the Cultural Exhibits Coordinator for Milwaukee's Irish Fest and President of the Milwaukee Chapter of the Shamrock Club in Wisconsin. What Irish culture have you experienced in the state or in Milwaukee? How is your community preparing or celebrating St. Patrick's Day? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or send us an email at wpr.org. So before we broke, Brian, you were telling us about the Irish in Milwaukee. Why don't you finish up your story for us?
Okay, yeah. As I said, the bishops in Baltimore were Irish and in charge of the Catholic Church in America. We're impressed that there's so many Irish in the Milwaukee area that they could just come in command and celebrate St. Patrick's Day, which was, you know, a big thing for them. I mean, they weren't celebrating St. Joan of Arc's Day, obviously. I'm sorry for you. Yeah, so that's the reason Milwaukee was cited as the archdiocese and see. So it's something that and that was very important for the development of the city, too, because at that time, Green Bay was the largest city in the state for the territory of Wisconsin. So that that completely changed the dynamics, where everything went from the northeast to the southeast changed everything. And so otherwise, you know, Green Bay might be the largest metropolitan area in the state.
Yeah, it's always fascinating to hear how things like that happen. Now, the Irish, of course, have had a major impact on American politics, and that's same. It's also true in Milwaukee. Talk a little bit about the effect in that city.
Okay, well, the Irish were on their way to becoming, along with the Germans, becoming the two dominant ethnic groups in the city of Milwaukee. And the Irish had the advantage in that they knew both the law that was the American law was based on the English law, and they spoke many of them spoke English when they first got over here. Not all of them did. Not all. You know, a lot of them did speak Irish when they came over, the Gaelic language.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 1860, you know, because the Irish were mainly Democrats and they were following Douglas rather than Lincoln. So they wanted to make sure that they were raising money for their own militia. And Governor Randall took away the rifles, so they were going out anymore. So they commissioned a boat to take them down to Chicago for a fundraiser called the Lady Elgin. And it sunk on the way back. It was struck by the Augusta, which was actually a British ship. So you know, you could probably figure out some conspiracy theory there. Many of the leaders in the Irish community and many of the leaders in the German Democratic community were drowned as well. The result was that there were a lot of Irish orphans, and the Germans continued to come over, but the Irish seemed to come over like waves, and this was like in between one of those waves where the Irish would have come over, but their family members were no longer there to take them in, stop the other places. So the other part of this was the cathedral had a school since 1847. Initially, it was a girls' school, but in 1860, they opened it up as a school for Irish boys as well. And the Brothers of the Holy Cross came from Ireland. And they started teaching the Irish orphan boys that were in Milwaukee. But they lasted 2 years. They said that one of the monks said, they're the most ill-tempered, rude, uneducable youth that they had ever encountered in Ireland or here.
Oh, my.
Because a lot of times the boys would jump out the windows and go running up Van Buren Street while the monks were had their backs turned to them. So after 2 years, the Brothers of the Holy Cross headed south to South Bend, Indiana, and started Notre Dame University. So the original Fighting Irish were here in Milwaukee.
But they just couldn't handle it.
They couldn't handle it, no.
Oh, that's interesting. And so have there been any, how's the Irish names or people of Irish descent who have been in like the mayor's office in Milwaukee or been influential on, how the city was run?
Yeah, there is actually a number of them. Daniel Hone, whose family name was actually Horan, until they changed it to make it sound more American, was very much Irish. He was, again, one of these Munster Irish. Most recently, Tom Barrett, whose family is also Munster Irish, was the mayor of Milwaukee. The first mayor, Irish mayor of Milwaukee, was a person by the name of Hans Crocker, who came from Dublin. I always thought that was an intriguing name. I wonder if he changed it just to appeal to the Germans. But he was the first Irish mayor of Milwaukee. And over the years, they have had many more Irish mayors. And it did, have an influence on the politics in the state of Wisconsin. A lot of the Irish traits and alliances came to light and came to the forefront as people went along. I mean, getting out of Milwaukee. If you go down 94 from Reedsburg on upwards to Toma, it's an Irish highway. There's so many Irish people that came from that area. I mean, there's a friend of mine, and he was telling me, Tommy Thompson and I went to grade school together and high school together. It's like, oh, really? I hadn't figured that one out until a few years ago that there was so many Irish in that area. And it's just like when they built 94, they just kind of connected all the Irish in the central western part of the state.
Yeah, there's a lot of Irish history throughout the state itself, isn't there?
Yes, there is. Mm-hmm. And go up to La Crosse County, La Crosse County, there's a town called the town of Erin. It's E-R-I-N. Most people call it Erin, but the Irish up there called it Erin.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a town of Erin down here in Milwaukee, so it's a greater Milwaukee area. The Irish did hold sway. I mean, like Tommy Thompson, his family's from County Offaly. He's very proud of his Irish roots, as he's told me a number of times. They did have a large impact on how the city of Milwaukee did develop.
Mm-hmm.
After World War II, a lot of the judiciary ended up being Irish after so many people came back and had the GI Bill to work with.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many Irish judges in Milwaukee in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and up until recently that you kind of figure that we're equal to Chicago for the influence of the Irish judicial decisions were made.
Definitely. Well, let's, before we run out of time here, let's talk about Milwaukee's Irish Fest that's coming up on August 18th, and it goes that whole weekend through the 21st. Why August? Is there a reason?
I'll go back and tell you that it's the Feast of Lunasa, the god Lug.
Uh-huh.
His feast was August 1st. But it was actually the weekend that we had open. So when Ed, like I said, when Ed Ward came to the Shamrock Club board, he wanted to emulate Festa Italiana, which at that time was garnering crowds of 140,000 for the weekend, their 4-day weekend. And he said, yeah, we can do that. I know we can do that. And he managed to, with the help of the Shamrock Club and all the Irish bars in Milwaukee, he managed to raise enough funds. So, I mean, first thing they did was create a board. So they had a functioning board before we had a festival.
Mm-hmm.
So the first 2 years that we were open, we didn't have a turnstile count. So we are not quite sure how many people actually wandered through the gates. After that, we had a lot better idea of the number of people that are coming down out of the grounds. We had the Summerfest grounds, which were available to us, and which we still utilize. It's one of the best sites for a festival like ours. I mean, all the other festivals that come in to visit and see ours say that, you know, there's no other site like this in the world. Even the Irish festival sites just wish that they had something comparable.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, well, Summerfest was created the grounds for festivals, so that totally makes sense why it's such a good place to do it.
Correct.
Yeah. So what, for those who haven't gone, and I think a lot of people really look forward to this festival every year, what do you experience when you're at the festival?
Well, what you experience is we have, this year we're back to 18 stages.
Oof.
We were down last year to about 12, and then we moved back up to 13. They include theater, include dance, music, head school, which is lectures. People like to come to them. The festival, it's the world's largest Irish music and cultural festival. Both of them are hand in hand, making this one of the most unique festivals in the world. We have the cultural village, which grew from one table in 1981. A full village right now is the genealogy area, every corner where you can meet with Irish and Irish American authors. The harp stage, the national instrument of Ireland, and we have some really rocking groups there, in spite of somebody thinking it's a nice little sedate area.
Right.
The Gaeltacht, the Irish-speaking tent, and the Cardolan, which is a bookstore area where you can pick up books on the Irish language. When we first started the Gaeltacht, we were writing people's names out in Irish, and about 15 years ago, Eamon, who was the Minister of Irish Language and Sport in the Islands of Ireland, launched a Gaelic initiative in the Gaeltacht area of Milwaukee Irish Fest because he felt that it was one of the premier areas for expanding the scope of the Irish language in the world, and he wanted to acknowledge that.
Wow.
The other areas we have are the theater. We have live productions, the head school, as I referenced before, and the cultural exhibits pavilion, which is my little patch of the festival grounds. So you get the cultural aspect of it, which you don't get in a lot of festivals where you get the music.
Mm-hmm.
And you might have two tables where, you know, you get recycled exhibits and go over and over. We change our exhibits up every year. Oh, we also have the Curraghs, the Irish racing boats. They're actually originally were Irish fishing boats. But we, as a group, change our exhibits year to year because people don't want to come in and see the same things. I mean, you do that, you know, it's just like watching Rerun Week on TV or something.
Right,
You want to be stimulated. You want to have some sort of idea that there is something alive about the festival, and you're going to get that with the music, and you're going to get that with with the culture.
Mm-hmm.
For the music, I mean, we have enough out of really great performers this year. Aoife Scott, who comes from the Black family. Her mother is Frances Black. I mean, I've known Frances for about 35 years. Frances is now a senator in Ireland.
Ah.
Boxing banjo is returning. Dervish, who was just here recently in Milwaukee, is returning. Drowsy lads from Columbus are coming back. Eileen Ivers is one of the most exciting fiddlers in the world. Is returning. Enter the Haggis, who hasn't been here in a number of years. They're a Canadian American band. Took their name obviously from Enter the Dragon, but you know, Enter the Haggis. Haggis being the
yes,
the national meal of Scotland.
Scotland, right? Yeah.
So Jig Jam is returning. They're wonderful, folksy country influence band. Lisa Candy's making her debut. She's a filler. Eileen, Leahy, McMaster Leahy family are coming back. Natalie McMaster and her husband, who used to perform with the Leahy family band, or the Leahys later on. You know, their children are now performing. So.
Yeah, what a history from with a festival that's been going on this long. That totally makes sense. And I believe that you also have a food drive that for the Hunger Task Force, right?
Yes, we do. Every year we raise. Last year was down a little bit, but then again, everything was down a little bit last year because
yes.
You know, we were just happy to get the festival off. I mean, our attendance was at about where we thought it was going to be, and. But yeah, the food drive is on Sunday. If you bring canned food goods or make a donation to the Hunger Task Force, you'll get free admission into the festival at that point. And then you can go to the Mass, or you can stand in the area that we call the Purgatory area. So those people don't go to the Mass, they're just waiting for the festival to open.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, you know, that the Milwaukee Irish Fest is produced by Celtic Milwaukee, which is a nonprofit organization. Why was that organization formed?
Celtic Milwaukee, actually, we used to be just Irish Fest, but a number of years ago, we wanted to broaden the scope of the festival itself to not just being in August, to doing things year-round, to influencing and enhancing Irish culture during the course of the year. And so that was one of the reasons we became Celtic Milwaukee, that it could generate things during the course of the year, like School of Music, which we have produced a number of wonderful musicians over the decades, as well as a film festival that we're producing in May. Another thing, among other things that we're doing. So it's not just a 4-day festival in August anymore. We're a year round event planning group, and we just so we can keep on enhancing Irish and Celtic culture in the greater Milwaukee area and state of Wisconsin and the world.
Right. And you must have a really dynamic group, lots of people involved to do all of this.
Yeah. We always talk about how we only have, I think it's seven or maybe it's now nine paid staff members. And everybody else that works for the festival, at the festival, including myself, are volunteers. We have, I think last time we have 4,500 volunteers. That's amazing. And it's amazing that we were able to retain that many people coming back year after year just to volunteer for us, to work with us. And they take great pride in being the Irish Fest family. And, I've been there since, I've been there since 81.
Okay.
I've been there a long time.
But it must be a wonderful atmosphere. People keep coming back and staying, actually.
Yes, and right now I think we're on our fourth generation.
Oh, wow, yeah. Well,
having volunteers come through.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the people who were in their 40s and brought their 20-year-old kids down to work for them are now in their 80s, and, their 20-year-old kids are in their 60s, and, life goes on, and another great grandkids are coming, not just your grandkids.
Sure. Now, one of the things Celtic Milwaukee does is run the Milwaukee Irish Fest Summer School. What kind of things are taught during that time?
The summer school, the last couple of years, has been a hybrid event. We teach all sorts of things knitting to quilting, the Irish language. And we have a number of classes, a number of teachers who come in to teach it. We teach music, we teach song. There's a number of cultural classes, history and such, that are brought in. We do, again, bring in people like the authors that I referenced before. So it's something that, what makes Milwaukee's festival a little bit different than a lot of the other festivals is that we have both these components,
mm-hmm.
both the music, the culture, and the summer school, which adds a different aspect of culture to it.
Now, the summer school is also for it's children and adults, right? It's for both?
That is correct.
Okay.
We generally have a children's group. For 2 years, we had the group Shaolin, who are Irish language teachers in Ireland and Qatar and a lot of other places throughout the world. They came in and they taught the kids how to say phrases in Irish and how to sing a song, and they had to perform at Irish Fest. And generally we have somebody who's going to be able to come in and interact with the kids and make them feel that they are actually learning something. It's just, not just you can park your kid here for 4 days and they're not going to get anything out of it.
Right. Well, that makes a whole lot of sense. And just as we wrap things up here, why is it so important to preserve like Irish and Celtic cultures?
It's important to remember where we came from. I'm saying this as a historian. If you don't remember where you came from and why you came from there in the first place, you'll lose that aspect and without me losing my train of thought here, if you don't understand why these things are being done, you won't really have an appreciation of it. You keep on, you don't want to live in the past, but as Mary McAleese, who was the president at the time, says, Milwaukee Irish Fest doesn't put something behind glass or in amber. They actually present it as a living, breathing creation. And make sure that Irish and Celtic culture is presented as such, not something that you should just admire from afar.
If you know that there's this
aspect and this feeling about the culture, then you will walk away feeling
great.
A little bit better and a little more knowledgeable.
Well said, Brian. Thank you very much. We've been talking with Brian Witt, the Cultural Exhibits Coordinator for Milwaukee Irish Fest. Join us again tomorrow. We're going to talk about indoor plants with Christopher Griffin, author of the new book called You Grow Girl. That's tomorrow on the Ideas Network. Hope you can join us. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Stay well.